The reading that we hear from the book of Ecclesiastes is probably the most famous excerpt from that book of wisdom. And one of the things that that excerpt of poetry so beautifully describes for us, that seasons will turn, everything will come and go in its own time and in its season, sometimes radically different than the season that precedes or follows it. And as the season changes around us, it's a life-shaping change over which we have no control, really, at all. We can take great pleasure and delight in the change of season. We can find it a challenge that we reluctantly just learn to adjust to. And this season, autumn or fall, is that turning of season which happens most suddenly. The changes seem to occur quickly, turning from hot to cold, from dry to drizzly, from light to dark. But it brings its gifts and its wisdom in turn, if we pay attention. Today we conclude a short series briefly reflecting on three messages of spiritual wisdom that I believe we can gather from autumn. The first of the three was ripening. Ripening, that process that we cannot miss happening around us in the world of trees and fields this season, but likewise, ripening being the fruitful growth, even the goal of our souls, that it is somehow this inevitable, but also something quite beyond our control. It's observable, but it's mysterious. Both the earth and our spirits ripen in their own time and season, and both held in the hand of God. Last week, it was the message of reaping. Ripening creates the opportunity for the labor and the joy of reaping, of the harvesting and the gathering in from fields and forests, enjoying the benefits of the earth producing of itself, entering in to the labors of others that have come before and labored alongside. It's hard work, but it's lightened by the joy of abundance. And today, after the ripening, after the reaping, we turn to autumn's wisdom of resting, something I'm sure to do after the sermon today. My Sunday nap is very much anticipated. We come to autumn's wisdom of resting. As the days shorten and cool, so much of the world around us begins to wind down. The labor of growing and producing slows and stops. The gathering in and the harvesting draws to a close. The leaves turn and are shed. Crisp air stirs with the rustle of dry leaves and the chill of frost that will be coming soon. We tuck into our sweaters and into our snuggies, and the world quiets itself for the slumber of winter. It is a season full of loveliness, and it's tinged with a little bit of loss. Summer is, without question, fading behind us. And winter's challenges, both the small challenges and the big ones, and the unknown ones, loom in front of us, around us in the natural world, shedding, resting, slumbering, dying. It is bittersweet, and it is breathtakingly beautiful. The turn of leaves sets our neighborhoods and sidewalks and yards ablaze with rich color, amber, bronze, orange, gold, yellow. This autumn foliage change across vast tracts of temperate seasonal forests of the earth is so widespread, so visibly dramatic. It is one of the few phenomena of the plant world that is observable from space. We wouldn't just see it walking down the sidewalk. We can see it from the moon. So when we walk beneath or drive past an autumn tree, we do well to stop and pause and gaze and give thanks for this extraordinary beauty that creation gives to us so freely and so easily, so effortlessly. So I'm curious, do you recall why the leaves of a deciduous tree, like maples, oaks, elms, birches, why the leaves of a tree change during autumn? Why do the leaves change color? Anyone remember their earth science class, something like that? Close. That's a part of it. Someone else want to offer a little other detail? Paul? Bingo. More or less, as the days grow shorter and the temperatures grow cooler, the trees get the signal to begin stopping their food production, which is through photosynthesis, which is enabled through chlorophyll, which is green. So the trees begin to shut down the work of photosynthesis. The green chlorophyll begins to shut down because a maple leaf that will be green as the chlorophyll begins to die and shut down. You can see that it is fading from this leaf, still a little bit of chlorophyll left. And from the same tree, as more and more of that green disappears, more and more of the yellow shows up. And even from the same tree, that yellow tinging even more deeply into amber and rust. Now we perceive the leaves as changing color, but the other colors have always been present, but they were obscured because of the more dominant green of the chlorophyll during spring and summer. That means, in effect, that maples are always blazing orange and gold. Oaks are always wine and bronze. Dogwoods flame red. Aspens are clear, bright yellow. Always displaying a riot of color, but we cannot see it. They're hidden under the work of photosynthesis until it stops. Hidden until they are revealed at rest. I want you to think for a moment of someone that you know very well. Someone that you know very well. Maybe it's a friend, maybe it's a coworker, it could be a family member, might even be yourself. Someone you know very well. So when you have that person in mind, think of this person while they are working, whatever it is they do as occupation, vocation. Think of this person as they work. What are their habits? What's their personality? What's their characteristics? How do they communicate when they're working? Now, think of that same person in a casual setting, where they are relaxed and at ease, maybe a party, maybe just at home, kicking back. So that person, are they the same at work and in that casual setting? Are they different? And how? What is revealed when they or when you are at rest? That is hidden when you work. We are not just known and defined by our work, but how we rest as well. Qualities that only show themselves when we pause and rest. Colors that only reveal themselves when we shut down and slumber, even when we die. Most of you may know Pat Schweibert in our congregation, a faithful leader and servant and worker, just beloved of so many of us. Pat's mother, Josie, died several weeks ago. And I've spoken at some length with Pat about she and her mother, and I have her permission to share this story that we shared about Josie. Her mother was not always an easy person to live with, shall we say, modestly, for those who know anything of the story of Pat and her mother. And most of her life, she was an anxious and prickly person. She had a difficult life that she lived with many of its own wounds and pains, which not only for her, but for pretty much anyone who lives in that state, often wounds the people around them. And she came to live with Pat at the Peace House for the last couple of years of her life, receiving loving care and companionship and more than a few arguments and frayed nerves along the way as well. Caring for her over the last years and months of her life was no easy task for Pat and the other caregivers at the house. But when Josie began her dying process, Pat describes the last days and weeks of her life, of her mother exhibiting a tenderness and a kindness, offering words of apology for long-standing hurts and wounds. And it seemed as though she died with greater tenderness and grace than she had lived. The last days of her life became a treasured gift. I wonder if they were a grace that was only given in those last days of living, or if that love and grace and tenderness were always there for her, maybe always there for all of us, but they weren't able to be revealed because of everything, all of the work that was covering them up. Now, we may not all be as prickly as she was. Mind you, some of us are. But I wonder how many of us still, as much as her, how many of us live our lives running to escape past demons, trying to meet unachievable expectations or some measure of inhuman perfection, working to always show a certain face to everyone, endlessly toiling to keep up a certain expected appearance, showing this face, this side, this color only to the world and all other colors, rich, varied, vibrant, hidden, just waiting for us to stop, release the burden, and rest. Imagine the glory that would blaze forth. What might need to rest? What might need to slumber? What might need to stop? What might even need to die? For you, for me, for our true and vibrant color to grace the world. For centuries, the Christian tradition has read the natural world as a sacred text, not only revealing God's handiwork, but actually revealing spiritual truth as clearly as the text on any page. During winter, many, if not most of us, have in our homes some kind of evergreen, it may be fake, but some kind of evergreen wreath or tree, especially for Christmas time. Churches, ours included, hang garlands of greenery for the season. Long before Christianity and Christmas, however, evergreens, pines and firs and spruce were honored as a reminder of life during the bleakest and apparently most lifeless season of the year. And we embrace them. We embrace them as symbols that are well suited to the Christian message of hope and very well suited to a gospel message of life that overcomes death. Yet, we in the modern West have developed into a culture that is unnaturally and forcibly evergreen. By that, I mean a culture that is obsessed with working. Our, quote, days off are more likely to be crammed with just a different kind of exhausted busyness instead of rest. People plagued with sleeplessness and then drugged for their insomnia. Obsessed with the preservation or the appearance of youth. Afraid and distancing ourselves from aging and death, fearing the changes of inevitable aging, fearing the loss of control by dying. So, if we keep the evergreens of Christmas, let us add the colored drying leaves and brittle branches of autumn, because we can learn its wisdom, not just its ripening, not just its reaping. We may learn its resting. We might even get a little bit better at changing. We might learn to gracefully shed the things that no longer work. We may learn its slumber. We may even, in its season, come to welcome its death. Bittersweet, but knowing that it blazes with hidden glory.